Welcome to the Certainty Advice Podcast, where everything we do starts with an alignment to Australia's first accredited standard of conflict-free advice, which ensures we are truly focused on helping you achieve more in your financial life. And now, here's your host, founder of the Certainty Advice Group, Jim Stackpool.
G'day everybody, Jim Stackpool from Certainty Advice Group with another podcast in our Certainty series where we aim to help as many Australians as possible access the most valuable financial advice truly in their best interests without any conflict or bias in any way. Because what Certainty Advisors do all over Australia, we follow Australia's first and only standard of advice that's built purely upon the value that you're seeking from your financial life as compared to the products or hours that a Certainty Advisor may provide. So regardless of seeing an advisor in Manly or Melbourne or Marylands or anywhere, you'll get a consistent standard. Our topic today is 3 years on. It's been 3 years on since the announcement of the Royal Commission into banking. And whilst the banks have all but exited financial advice space, taking some big losses, supposedly near on $7 billion, according to some estimates, along the way, new regulations have come in to forcing advisors back to the exam room, and huge compliance paperwork to jump over. And along comes COVID-19, which has tipped everybody's world, physically, mentally, and potentially financially, off its axis. And so everyone's been affected, or people know others that are truly affected. But really, what we're asking now is, what has been the benefit, the real benefit to Australians from that Royal Commission that cost not only some of the players up to $7 billion, but the taxpayers an estimated $70 million. So I'm lucky to have Jared Sterling from Sterling Financial Consulting, just across that Captain Cook Bridge in the beautiful Sutherland Shire in South Sydney here, sterlingconsulting.com.au, Jared Sterling's firm. Jared's director and a principal certainty advisor. He really works with predominantly SMEs, small and medium enterprises, and their niche is for those SMEs that are family run. But as you're listening to Jared's take on what has really happened in the last 3 years since the Royal Commission, listen to what Jared calls the new expected driver of trust. At least the clients coming to see him are seeking now. Obviously, and understand too, the implications Jared will share of COVID and what he thinks the next inquiry is going to be. But I started by asking, you know, what has been the benefit for Australians 3 years on?
I think that the biggest benefit, maybe even the only real true benefit for the Aussie public, is the decoupling of the banks from advice. And that hasn't been a finding from my understanding of the Royal Commission. It wasn't enforced. It was the banks taking it on their own volition to get out of advice. And I think that's going to pay benefits and dividends to Australians down the track.
How so? Tell me, why is that a benefit in your opinion?
Well, I think the banks get to focus on what they're good at creating great products. And there's no one forced to actually recommend those products. They'll stand up on their own two feet. So advisors will give advice on, you know, the advice that's right and the appropriate products that fall out underneath that will be judged on their own merit to the client situation, as opposed to being dictated to by a hierarchy to say, please use our products.
So some might say it's just a chance to go into reverse gear up their fintech offer and then come back again with robo-advice, similar proposition, similar offer, similar promises, lesser price now without an expensive distribution unit.
How cynical of you, Jim. However, you're right. I mean, that's just going to open up another opportunity, I suppose, for another player, all those same players, to reinvent themselves without the distribution model and you know, start a fintech. You're absolutely correct. But you know, it doesn't take away from the need from the face-to-face interaction and being able to look someone in the eye and get the advice and feel comfortable with, you know, someone taking an interest and really trying to put you first and deliver, you know, what's important to you. So I don't think the face-to-face aspect will ever go, but the interaction of technology in general can only benefit everyone if it's used appropriately.
Do you see the banks having a really solid, rich, glorious future in fintech, just going down that line, you know, considering the might and power of the Amazons and the Microsofts and the Facebooks and the Googles?
I don't actually, Jim. I think they'll stick to writing loans and product product innovation. I don't see them going down that fintech path, although I must admit I haven't necessarily given it a huge amount of thought. It's not been something I think that they would do. So I would expect it to be others in the industry and the marketplace rather than them. However, yeah, they will need to reinvent themselves in the next couple of years, as they always do, once the Royal Commission's well behind them and they can look at what's going to be next for them to try and increase their profits.
And so what about long-term, Jared? So short-term, the benefits to Australians has been probably the decoupling of the banks, but longer-term, you know, 3 more years from now, what do you think maybe some benefits could flow from the Royal Commission?
I think a key benefit will be that the advisors are, for want of a better term or the appropriate term, independent and being able to provide the advice that's appropriate to them. There'll be more advisors that will be focusing on niche areas, so they'll be really engrossed and understand the complexities of certain markets, you know, really be able to provide solutions that are appropriate to them. So I think longer term or, you know, the medium term outlook for advice is going to be about being more specialists in specific industries and being able to help those people achieve what's most important to them.
And do you think that will mean that more Australians than the 20% now supposedly only get advice, more Australians will get access to advice as they become more aware of these independent advisors?
I think, yes. I mean, it's interesting. COVID, I think, has made a lot of people realise that advice is important, especially in these trying times. And those that probably wouldn't have sought advice previously are now seeking advice, even when they're probably finding their cash flow a little bit tighter. So I believe if we could reduce some of the red tape for the advisors to deliver advice, which would hopefully will increase the profitability of those businesses, they'll be able to reinvest and be able to offer the advice to, you know, the Australian public at a cheaper price down the track. But there is a lot of red tape we have to remove before that can happen.
And when you say more Australians are now seeing the need and valuing advice, what sort of topics are you finding your clients are asking you or your prospects are asking you as a consequence of COVID?
I think it's the certainty. They're probably reaching out for some unrealistic expectations from advisors and expecting us to be a bit more medical experts. But I think just having the certainty of what the future holds, where they're going to be, why is their balance dropped by X amount? I think those normal reactions in a panic situation to make sure that their future is going to be okay and they're going to achieve everything they want to achieve.
And do you think once the vaccine's freely available and we're back, you know, at our sporting games and back potentially at our workplaces, that need for advice will reduce, or do you think that's forever been, that platform's been or ever been shaken and the need for advice will be stay the same?
No, I think it will probably reduce somewhat. Those that, you know, are doing it from a knee-jerk reaction or a reaction to an issue will always be that way. The area I think for us to, as advisors, to be able to be getting more than that 20% obtaining advice is the profession needs to have a lot more trust, a huge amount more trust that we are deemed a profession, whether we are or we aren't. I think we need it to be from a public perceptions point of view where we are working in their best interests. And that's, you know, it's not a question. We don't ask if we're, or we'll have to say we're working in their best interests. It's a given like it is with the other professions. I think once that happens, that's when we'll start seeing a higher penetration of that 20%.
And the drivers to make that, as you said, huge more trust, huge amounts of more trust needs to be required. What's going to drive that for the Australians that will be seeking advice or will start seeking advice?
I think the transparency in fees, Jim. I think the complete removal of all commission-based payments would be a good step for that, and being able to discuss the charges or the fees that the clients are going to be paying to you or to me as the advisor and agreeing on that. And then knowing whatever recommendations sort of flow from that discussion isn't going to be because an advisor's getting paid a commission or clipping the ticket here or there. It's because it's the right recommendation. And I think that's the biggest one. The amount of different revenue streams that advisors have had in the past has made it very difficult to understand the true value that clients are receiving.
So going back to the Royal Commission, just in the last couple of questions, who in your mind have been the winners and the losers?
I think the industry funds have been a winner because they were sort of just left aside and no one really delved too deep into those. Education providers no doubt have been the biggest winner in the sense that we have to do extra education. And for some, you know, they've got industry experience that have been around for a number of years that, you know, may or may not have the appropriate level of degrees or things like that have gone back to university or to do extra study for no particular purpose but to get that piece of paper. The only person that's really winning from that is the universities that are charging the fees. I do think we need to raise the education standards across the board, but it should have been done in a different way. And the industry funds should have been a bigger deep dive into things that are happening there with general advice over a fairly big asset for people in terms of their superannuation. It will most likely be their biggest asset you know, outside of the family home, if not including the family home. And without a deep dive or a proper look at the industry funds, I think they've maybe have dodged a bullet. And no doubt the biggest losers are the banks, and rightly so.
Mm. And so are you predicting there on the side, Jared, that the next hotspot for investigation and possible reform might be the industry funds?
I think there needs to be, comes back to that vertical integration model again. You're still giving your so-called a financial planner giving specific advice on a specific fund within an industry, and I don't think that's advice. It does come down to more of providing a product advice, and this product or this asset allocation within our fund is what most appropriate for you, without actually looking at, you know, other alternative funds that could be suitable as well.
Mm. Okay. So anything else to add?
I think it'd be interesting to see how the politicians play this out. They've gone a long way to try and improve the industry, but stop short, I think, of the big one that would help reduce red tape, and that's just on how we charge. We should be charging specific fees to clients that should be agreed upon each year, and I'm not one that says it has to come out of, you know, a client's pocket. If it comes out of super, it should definitely be a formal agreement that's re-signed every year and given to the trustees of those super funds so they can be able to release the funds for appropriate payment. That has to happen sooner than later, but there's been too much vested interests and lobby groups that have stopped that occurring.
Are we where you thought we would be in 3 years from such a thing like a Royal Commission?
I don't know how to answer that, Jim. I don't think we are. It seems like we've just added more regulation to try and solve the problem. We've got more disclosure agreements that need to be given. I don't know if that's the solution. I think we're just band-aiding over it. It comes back down to the, you know, that fee discussion and that transparency, I think, will bring us forward and solve a lot of the issues that we're seeing. I think, you know, a number of those case studies in the Royal Commission, the fall down in most of them, if not all of them, was that there was a product that was being sold, but an advisor was going to be paid some form of commission that was going to put the client in a worse position. I don't think that would occur if you had agreed on the fee before you started the work and then you made your recommendation thereafter.
Yeah. And so your prediction now, Jared, 3 years from now, if 20% of Australians seek advice from a planner or for some sort of financial advice, what do you think that number will be in 3 years?
I don't think it'll be much more, Jim. If we hit 25%, I think that'll be a success. I think we'll be around that 20. We might increase it by 10%, so say 22%.
There you have it, Jared Sterling from Sterling Financial Consulting here in Sydney down at Caringbah. What was your take on that? Mine, three things. Trust can't be built when judgment is present. We've always known that one. But trust can't be built, it seems, when people are getting financial advice now, if fees are not transparent. That is one of the benefits, Jared believes, is that Australians are much more aware and expecting to understand the price, usually in dollars, that they have to pay for the advice. Gone are the days when fees used to be able to be hidden in products or some sort of hourly rate model. Also heard that Jared believes the industry funds may have won the battle over the retail funds and the banks exiting their distribution channels, only to probably regroup and come back with some more fancy internet fintech, as it's called, approaches to attracting more and more of our money. But the industry funds themselves will face new challenges from the regulators as they continue to offer what is really a product recommendation, but they're still calling it advice, even they call it intra-fund advice. I think they're skipping around some terms there. And Jared also shared that red tape is certainly lifting costs. The compliance has followed the Royal Commission, or really the compliance approaches that have been put into place, even though there's no policing of these at this stage, it's certainly increasing the costs to provide what is basically a product-based compliance approach. But there you have it, Jared Sterling, supporting his family-based and busy SMEs, as we all are, leading them to ensure they're on their best possible paths as they live those financial lives in these uncertain times. Love to get your feedback on this one, so follow up on Jared Sterling. That's sterlingconsulting.com.au. More information about Certainty Advice is certaintyadvicegroup.com. Take care. All the best. Jim Stackpole signing out.
Thank you for listening to the Certainty Advice Podcast with Jim Stackpole. To access the materials from today's show or to join in the conversation, head on over to certaintyadvicegroup.com. Please let us know what you think. We'd love to hear your feedback. certaintyadvicegroup.com.